You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 118, Zootopia. Vote Mason for president.
Hello, and welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. We're your hosts. I'm Morgan Stradling, joined live in studio with our co-host, Chelsea Robson.
Yay!
And of course, our other amazing co-host, Mason Smith.
I'm in Texas.
Woohoo! Huzzah! So this is the Animation Addicts Podcast. It's a podcast for those who love all things animation, those who maybe didn't grow out of their animation obsession or still in the midst of their animation obsession. I hope you're still in the midst of your animation obsession if you're listening to this podcast.
Right.
And I really hope that you haven't grown out of it because there's nothing to grow out of. Everything, if you like animation, we like animation. And this is the place for animation lovers. We're the friends that you wish you had so you could talk about animated films. Because I don't know if you're like me, but it's very hard to find someone who wants to talk about films like this on a very serious level.
Yeah, and who don't like think, those are for kids. Why did you go see that?
So that's what this podcast is about. And this episode, we are talking about a very amazing movie that just came out, Zootopia, which did released this past week in the U.S. and is doing quite well.
It's got all the buzz.
Mm-hmm. All the buzz.
So before we get into it, do you have any updates or anything you want to say?
I really just want to talk about Zootopia. Y'all should know that this is a mega, mega spoiler episode. Like, there are going to be huge spoilers, so be warned. If you haven't seen it yet, go away. Also, it's International Women's Day, so shout out to all the ladies out there who are following their dreams. Hey, we have two ladies on the show!
How convenient.
Yay, women. All right, so, oops.
So let's hop right into it. We are going to do a nerdy couch discussion, which is kind of a mini discussion to help warm us, to wet the palate before we go into the main discussion about the film. Now, this nerdy couch discussion is going to be, we are going to be joined by one of our patrons and one of the members of the Rotoscopers writing staff, or the Roto team, a Roto writer named
AJ.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, welcome, AJ. AJ is one of a certain level of patron where one of the perks is he gets to join us for a nerdy couch discussion, and he is our very first lucky patron. So first off, thank you for being a patron. Thanks for also being a member of our team, and it's really cool to meet you unofficially.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yay.
So what we do when we have new guests, we do something, a little game called Catch and Fire. So Chelsea, do you want to introduce what Catch and Fire is?
Yes, Catch and Fire. It's actually one of those things that we've been doing since the beginning of the podcast, where we are able to ask rapid fire questions to any new guest. And it's basically a way that we're able to get to know the new people that are coming in. So you get a little bit of a knowledge of how they would fit in your life as a friend based solely upon their answers of these 20-some-odd questions.
So let's get into it. Let's get dangerous.
Well, then, how about a quick round of catch and fire?
Catch and fire? You mean me?
You're the only one with enough courage.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
So, AJ, are you ready?
I was born ready.
Oh, sweet.
All right. First animated movie you remember seeing?
The Lion King.
Favorite cartoon growing up?
Rugrats.
Favorite animated movie?
Probably Iron Giant.
Favorite animator / artist?
That's a tough one, but I don't know. Chuck Jones leaps to mind really fast, so I'll say Chuck Jones.
Classic animation or CGI?
Classic.
Favorite animation studio?
Disney. Yay.
Right on the perfect day. Disney or Pixar?
Disney.
Laika or Ghibli?
Ooh, Laika.
Disneyland or Disney World?
I have never been to Disney World, unfortunately, so I'm going to have to say Disneyland.
Princesses, Disney princesses, or Disney princes?
Princesses, definitely.
Heroes or villains?
Villains.
Stitch or Tinkerbell, who's your favorite mascot?
Stitch. He's the most like me.
Mickey, Goofy, or Donald?
Ooh, Donald.
Huey.
Wow. I guess Huey. He seems kind of like the leader, and I like leader people. So.
Bad color. Favorite animated dog?
Oh, Snoopy.
People or anthropomorphic?
Anthropomorphic.
Songs or no song?
Songs.
Who totally. Fight, King of Fergus or Stoic the Vast?
Ooh, Stoic the Vast.
All right, who would win in a fight, Frozone or Elsa?
Frozone, for sure.
Summer releases or winter releases?
I think winter releases overall. Most of my favorite movies tend to be released around Christmas for whatever reason.
Rasputin or Dr. Facilier?
Ooh, Dr. Facilier. I'm actually right in the middle of watching Princess and the Frog for the first time, so he's fresh on my mind.
Okay, and the most important and final question of our rapid-fire segment, which would you rather watch? The Hunchback of Notre Dame 2, Cinderella 2, The Return of Jafar, or Norm of the North?
Let me do a Sideshow Bob shiver. I can't do it right. Or a Simpsons shiver, I guess. I guess Norm of the North, I've never seen it, so I'd like to see it at least once to see how awful it truly is.
You will be the first and only person to ever pick Norm of the North on Catching Fire.
Yay, I've gotten down in roto history.
Oh, 52 out of 52! Well done!
All right, so thank you for doing that. Now we know a little bit about you. And we're going to go into our main discussion, or our nerdy couch discussion. And since Zootopia features anthropomorphic animals, we thought we would do a nerdy couch discussion on anthropomorphic animals. We've only reviewed a few films that are feature anthropomorphic creatures. You know, we have done Robin Hood, which is kind of like the pinnacle of anthropomorphized people. Well, not people, animals. I keep saying, how many times in a sentence can I say anthropomorphic? But anyways, we wanted to talk about it and just how it differs. So let's start off there.
I think a good place to start off is actually talking about the very first trailer, Zootopia, where they felt the need to explain what anthropomorphic is.
Right, like they invented the term.
Right. So, some of my favorite anthropomorphic cartoons that come to mind right away. I'm going to talk about Rescuers and Rescuers Down Under. I'm a fan of those.
I think I have an even funner way of talking about anthropomorphic animal movies.
Then tell me.
May I propose an anthropomorphic duel? Each of us has to, it's like the Disney duel. We each take turns citing one animated anthropomorphic animal animated movie. And if you get stumped, then you're out and we'll give you like 10 seconds to answer one.
Perfect. I am totally
good. Now, right, let me get my
really quick. What is our definition of anthropomorphic? Just talking to animals?
Walk on two legs and clothing is optional.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
feature films.
Are they going au naturel? Okay, so we will go Mason, then Morgan. No, Mason, and then AJ, then Chelsea, then Morgan, and back around. So get ready. This was Mason's idea. We'll give him first shot.
Okay, I'll go first. Zootopia.
Ratatouille.
Rescuers. Robin Hood.
Fritz the Cat.
Rescuers Down Under.
Puss in Boots. Great. Now I'm a little bit stuck. Fantastic Mr. Fox.
All right. Nine Lives of Fritz the Cat.
An American Tale.
Ooh, not bad.
Fievel Goes West.
Also, ooh, you stole my next one.
Where's Clothes? The Aristocats? No. Cinderella has mice that walk on 2 feet and wear clothes.
As anthropomorphs. Okay. I'm going to do the Prince and the Pauper, because, like, technically Mickey Mouse is an animal and he's anthropomorphic.
True fact.
Should we eliminate Mickey Toons from this? Because there's, like, a bazillion of those.
Yeah, feature-length animated films.
But just use it for me. Oh, Winnie the Pooh.
Secret of Nim.
Ooh, Nim!
Pebble and the Penguin.
Ooh, not bad.
We're going away from Disney. Saludos Amigos.
Okay, Surf's Up.
Space Jam.
They don't count.
We're going to go with...
5 seconds.
Dang it. I've blanked. Oh, this is my worst game.
Chelsea's out of there. All right, everybody recuperate. And it's Morgan's turn.
All right. So how about The Adventures of Mr. Toad?
Oh, Ichabod Mr. Toad. That was pretty good. Once Upon a Forest.
What?
So bad.
Anthropomorphic movie.
Okay. Let me see. I just had one. Oh, All Dogs Go to Heaven. Carface Walks on 2 Feet.
Oh, that's true. All right, Morgan's turn.
Rock a Doodle.
Oh, Rock a Doodle. Oh, that's a good one.
Like your go-to.
I know.
No pressure. Jeez, I can't think of any right now. Dang it, Watership Down's not anthropomorphic. I quit. I didn't get it. Okay.
Wits, it's just AJ and me battling it out.
Let's see. All Dogs Go to Heaven 2.
Oh, I love it.
Well, Anastasia has Bartok, who walks on 2 feet.
Works for me. Oh, I should have said Bed Knobs and Broomsticks.
Well, then...
Let's see. I was about to say All Dogs Go to Heaven again. Let's see.
Is Jungle anthropomorphic? It's like half. No, it's really not.
Does Baloo have a vest?
No.
Okay, then no.
They could be naked. We've established that.
They don't walk up to you.
Oh, sorry.
Your mercy time has ended. You've got 10 seconds.
Okay, let's do The Princess and the Frog. They stand on 2 feet.
Oh, yeah, there is a trumpet-playing crocodile, so that...
That's basically the epitome of playing instruments. I'm going to say Bedknobs and Broomsticks because Mason didn't say it, but he gave it as an option.
That's a gimme. All right.
So there you go. Take that.
All right. Well, in that case, I'm going to say, wait a minute. Did we decide that the Jungle Book didn't count or that it does count?
Doesn't count. Go.
Okay. Oh, I'm stuck. And I lost.
To prove my dominance.
Great Morgan wins.
I did not think I would do good at that. So I'm impressed. Oh, and look at now I'm actually looking at the comments, and there are some ones that other people mentioned. The Adventures of American Rabbit.
Oh, Cats Don't Dance. That's such a good one.
Oh, Cats Don't Dance.
Tailspin.
Tailspin, is that a movie?
No, it's a TV show. But I'll give you points for awesome.
Ooh, we could have done DuckTales, the Lost Lamp movie.
Yes.
Blue is in a vest in Tailspin. That's what. I just see Blue in a vest. Oh, the Chipmunk Adventure. Oh, I'm glad none of us. Do Smurfs catch animals?
How about trolls?
I think not animals.
Yeah, they're more toys. Oh, trolls.
What are you thinking with that?
Troll is more.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that was very, very.
How
fun.
About We're Back? Does We're Back?
Yes.
Yeah. Dinosaurs are technically animals.
Yes, they are. They are creatures.
Like, Barney is anthropomorphic, but are the dinosaurs in We're Back anthropomorphic? I don't know. Anyway. I really think it's interesting how the more the animals walk and talk. Oh, Horton, here's a who. The more the animals walk and talk and wear clothes like us, the more their story seems to be meant to resemble our story. We'll talk about this later, but I think Zootopia is an extreme case of that. But sometimes with these anthro movies, you can't help but think, hey, so is this animal supposed to be this group of people or this politician or this kind of person? So I don't know. What do y'all think about that? Do you think it gets more uncanny and a little more meant to resemble human society the more anthropomorphic they go?
As though it's like fable-ish?
I never particularly have gotten that vibe. I think sometimes even if they are human or if they're animals like the Lion King, I don't feel that that distances me more from the moral of the story or the theme.
Yeah. Watership Down is one of the most political movies out there. It's so naturalistic. So you're right. I think there really isn't, it goes through both extremes. It can really harbor this metaphor, this message.
I think it works on me like almost on a subconscious level. Like when I look at a movie like Robin Hood, I don't really think about, oh, these are foxes that I'm watching or other animals, but that's the Robin Hood I know. That's the one that's in my mind.
Yeah, I think very quickly, you know, we're introduced to the characters and we say, oh, Robin Hood is a fox. Maid Marian is also a fox. Lady Cluck is a chicken. And then you kind of move on and then think of them as human-esque characters that just happen to be in this world where other animals are around and they walk on two legs and whatnot.
All right.
So what is the draw with anthropomorphic characters? Why do we do it?
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Animal puns are easy, cheap gags.
True.
I'm just saying.
You know, one time when we were talking, I think it was Steve Hickner, how you were interviewing him, and the reason why he made some of his, when he was writing his book, the reason why he made the characters in his book animals is because then it was no longer subject to, I can look at this as a male or female or whatever. Like, I don't take offense to anything. I can in a secondary point of view, which means that I'm more acceptable to whatever somebody is trying to teach you.
So instead of being like, that guy reminds me of this person in my life, it's more like, am I like that dog or am I like that cat?
Right.
So that, like, I never want to have that.
She has brown hair, therefore it is not me. Obviously.
Right. They wear glasses. I would never wear glasses. I'm not like that character.
That is not.
Yeah.
I think there's also kind of a built-in appeal to it. Like, we've been puppy sitting at my house lately, and everybody loves a puppy. And I was thinking about that because I knew that this was going to be their nerdy couch discussion. And I was thinking, there really is a lot of love for animals, like, right away. Like, I think I like anthropomorphic animals a little bit more quickly. Like, I was thinking, like, I think Judy Hopps in Zootopia is one of the most likable characters in any Disney movie. And I think that's largely because she's a rabbit, you know, like, aw, bunny, you know.
I think she you can't call her cute, remember? I think she could be possibly even cuter than Anna from Frozen.
Yeah. Whoa.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Eight words in Frozen Country.
Yeah, I totally agree with what AJ's saying. Animals, there is this draw that humans have to animals. They're kind of, they can be our companions, they can be our friends, they can also be very terrifying and ferocious. And so it's also another easy way to, like Chelsea said, to tell this allegory, because a lot of times in these anthropomorphic type of films, especially, you know, I'm looking back at Robin Hood, the good guys are usually like the less, you know, fearsome animals, or, you know, if you're poverty stricken or you're the one that is being downtrodden, it's typically one of the prey animals, not the predator animals. And they always show like the king is the lion, and
the lion is always the big man is always the lion.
You know, and so I think it's an easy way, because we have these preconceived notions and stereotypes, even with animals and what they represent. So it's easy for us to tell a story by using those stereotypes that already exist. Like, oh, the lion is very brave and strong and it leads. So it should be a mayor, or it should be king, or whatnot. And
the fox is clever, yes, and sneaky.
So then we
weasel, and the weasels are always the weasel.
And the weasel's always the weasel.
It is true. So that's just an easy way for them to kind of tell a story and really invoke a response or a reaction, yeah, just by the type of animal that they're using.
And yeah, storytelling and animation is about archetypes, and animals have these almost mythological archetypes. They're not stereotypes, they're like archetypes, because it's in their biology, right? Which is a big no-no apparently in Zootopia, but yeah, like I think that's sort of the appeal of anthropomorphic animals, because it's like, I remember when they were doing in production for Robin Hood, they were going to make Friar Tuck a pig, but they thought that that would be a disrespectful image of a friar in the Catholic Church, and so they changed him to a badger, something a little more neutral. And so that's an example of how, you know, certain animals just have this aura or have this like traditional feel about them, hence the lion being in charge.
It can also be like parts of our personality. So our personality, I may have the lion side of my personality, but I may have the kitten side of my personality, you know, so it's ways of differentiating size and grandeur in a very simple way.
Speaking of symbols with animals, it's interesting to note that in Zootopia, the mayor is a lion and the assistant mayor is a lamb, you know, and so that's like definitely a biblical Christian reference to the lamb and the lion, like, working together and existing together. So I don't know if that was intentional, but I think that there might have been some symbolism there as to like what they had accomplished in Zootopia, like at the beginning of the film. So
yeah, and I think that runs all the way through the movie. Like, if you were going to have any animal be kind of a con artist or something like that, you would think of a fox like right away.
Yeah.
And so, and like kind of like we were talking about before, in a way that kind of drives a theme of Zootopia home. Because you look at yourself and you think, am I guilty of these same things that these other animals are thinking? You know, like the stereotyping and stuff like that. I think it's just an interesting way of driving the point home.
Yeah, that's another testament to how complex this film is. All right, so last point on the Nerdy Couch discussion. Do you want to take this one, Morgan?
Absolutely. So can we just... Well, you can't... You know, this is the elephant in the room, or the furry in the room. We can't talk about anthropomorphized characters and creatures and movies without talking about the furry subculture that is out there on the internet, and it is a thing. So
they were so happy when this movie came out. Like, they were pretty much convinced that Disney made this movie for furries. Like, people were literally tweeting on Twitter, "This is our moment!" Like.
Yes. I mean, so,
I've been on Rotten Tomatoes trying to unlock the public reaction or figure out the puzzle of the public reaction to Zootopia. And this is one audience review that just gave it 1/2 of 1 star. He said, almost everyone in the audience was in a fur suit and they started barking in the theater. This was nothing but furry porn and crappy audio. Day away. I was like, yikes, this guy had a bad night.
Nathan, go into this furry culture.
Explain to me. I've never heard of the furry culture.
Ooh.
I am very sorry to any furries who are currently watching this review. I am not your ambassador. I do not sing the song of your people. I will try to explain in the most sensitive and objective way possible. But these are people who they put on furry suits, sometimes homemade, to resemble like a cute fox or a dog or a wolf, you know. And it's not just the suit. When they put on the suit, they put on an alter ego. They become someone else. So a lot of these people who sometimes can be dealing with social anxiety and social problems, there's a lot of social stuff going on with these people. They this new furry persona allows them to act out and be themselves or be another person. And so for some people, it's kind of a crutch. It's somewhere in between. The suit is a crutch and the suit is therapy for them. And you know, we love to hate the furries, and you know, I'm sure their struggle is real or whatever. I don't know. I should stop talking, but that's what a furry is. They will furry conventions. They have furry outings. They'll walk around in public, and that's what they are. But apparently, they loved this film, and I don't know, for some reason, a lot of them started howling during theater. So I guess you have to kind of act like the animal you want to be. I hope I didn't offend too many people. I'm going to refresh the YouTube video, see how many people have disliked the video. Oh, no, never mind. We're still good.
So it is a subculture for just a way to express yourself in a different way. So, you know, you have people who go online and they go to World of Warcraft and they take on that persona, or you go to, you know, there's a place called Second Life where you sort of like Sims, and you create a world for you. And if I'm a, you know, a girl in this life, but I want to be like a biker man, you know, with tattoos, or, you know, the completely opposite of what I am, I can take that on in another life. And that's kind of what the part of the furry fandom is, whether it's actual demonstration through going to cons and events, or whether it's through my online persona with a different avatar that I select, like I'm a cute fox or whatnot. So, there is a thing that it can be very NSFW in the fan art. So do not Google it, because
there was a GoFundMe campaign to stop all the NSFW fan art of Zootopia before the movie came in, saying that, and this was actually by an alleged furry, saying that this gives our community a bad image because we're not all about this. Right.
Yeah. Sorry. I had to mention, you know, furry, because that is one thing. Like, furries do love anthropomorphized, you know, art and films, because it is that representation of what they love.
Right.
And Disney did actually, and I've read this on Wikipedia, of course, but they actually did try to reach out to part of the furry community, and they set up a meetup from different members trying to promote the film as like a way to do some viral marketing. So that's kind of the tie-in.
Interesting. Right. I mean, I've never even known that this exists.
Yes.
There is a thing for everything.
Yes.
So, to be totally objectively speaking, these are cosplayers who prefer to put on the identity of different animals. But what I don't get is that, why were they so gaga over this movie? Because when the animals in Zootopia aren't people in suits, they're actual animals that are acting like people. So is there some sort of like, they're like anti-furries. This is the anti-furry movie. These are not people who want to be animals. They're animals who are people. So
this is the ultimate furry movie, because furries want to become people, or as human as possible, while still having fur and scales and, you know, slithering tongues.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts, AJ?
Yeah, AJ, sorry.
Yeah, I think it's largely because it's more of a modern, or like more of a real world type of anthropomorphic movie than most of them are. Because I was wondering the same thing, like, why this movie in particular, when there's like a ton of other anthropomorphic movies? And I think it's largely because the animals live in a city, like, well, kind of like ours, and they go and they have jobs and they do typical human things, like, I think even more so than most other anthropomorphic movies. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just that question of being relatable. They're able to relate on that level.
Very mainstream. It is Disney.
Yeah.
You know, when Disney does something, it's, you know, everyone's going to see it.
Right.
So anyways, any last thoughts on anthropomorphic films? What are your favorite anthropomorphic films? We'll close it up with that and give us your last thoughts.
Robin Hood, hands down, closely followed by Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Ooh, I'd forgotten about Fantastic Mr. Fox. Now this decision's going to be hard. I guess it's a toss-up between Fantastic Mr. Fox and The Rescuers Down Under. I love adventure movies. So, and that's like the ultimate adventure movie. And it happens to feature anthropomorphic animals, so so much the better.
Nice.
Let's see, for me, oh, I don't know. Probably Secret of Nim. Just like looking at movies that I'm like, this is a cool movie. But, you know, anthropomorphic as far as like, this is anthropomorphic. Definitely Robin Hood is the first one that comes to your mind.
Yeah, I can't. I have to say Robin Hood because it's the ultimate Disney movie. It's so quotable. And you know, I do think it epitomizes just this trend. And I think when people are making anthropomorphic films, they do look to that as an example of a good one. So, all right. Well,
Ernesto says An American Tale. And Rachel Wagner says A Great Mouse Detective is up there.
Yes, it is. All right. So thank you so much for joining us for this Nerdy Couch discussion. AJ, any last thoughts before we let you go?
Not really. It's still kind of surreal that I'm here. Never thought I'd be on the show. But thank you for...
You're welcome. Thank you for joining us. This is awesome. And, you know, thank you for being a patron. And this was a good idea. I liked having guests for the show. So maybe we'll bring you back one day.
Thank you.
Zootopia, a gleaming city where animals of all breeds, predator and prey alike, live together in peace and harmony.
Hi, I'm Judy, your new neighbor.
Yeah, well, we're loud.
Don't expect us to apologize for it.
ZPD's first rabbit officer, Judy Hopps.
You ready to make the world a better place?
Bad news in this city gripped by fear.
What can you tell us about the animals that went savage? Are we safe?
This is priority one.
Hopps. Parking duty.
Sir, I'm not just some token bunny.
You strike out, you resign.
Deal. Hello? I'm here to ask you some questions about a case.
Then they should have gotten a real cop to solve it.
You are under arrest.
For what? Hurting your feelings?
You are a key witness.
No, he is.
Hey, I need you to run a plate.
All right, I know a guy. You need something done, he's on it.
They're all slots? We are in a really big hurry.
I am on
it.
Break.
I have 36 hours left. We can only solve it together.
It's not about how badly you want something. It's about what you are capable of.
I am a real cop.
Never let them see that they get to you. You bunnies. So emotional.
No, no, no. Do not let go.
I'm gonna let go.
What? Until I
reach the end. We may be evolved, but deep down, we are still animals.
Quit it. You're gonna start a howl.
No! You are naked.
For sure. We're a naturalist club.
All the way down. Oh.
Life's a little bit messy. Try everything. We all make mistakes. No matter what type of animal you are, change starts with you.
We gotta go.
Whose car is it?
The most feared crime boss, Mr. Big.
Is that Mr. Big?
Stop talking.
Huh. Awesome. Oh,
Daddy! What did we say? No icing anyone at my wedding.
I have to, baby. Daddy has to.
Moving on to our main discussion, we are going to be talking about, which we have referenced on and off throughout this episode, we are going to be talking about Disney's Zootopia, which was just released, like I said, in the U.S. this past week on March 4th, 2016. It was previously released in a few other countries a few weeks before this, and so yeah, let's jump right into it. So I'm going to give some basic information about the film, which has been obtained from the good old Wikipedia because it has that little sidebar on the side. And that's all I need. I need the studio. I need the directors. I need the budget. I need how much it made. Poof. So thank you, Wikipedia. If you have not contributed to Wikipedia, I recommend donating a dollar. We all use it. Let's be real. And if it went away, I think we'd be pretty sad.
I would be sad, yeah.
Yeah, so the directors were Byron Howard, Rich Moore, and we also had a co-director, which is Garrett Bush. So before I go on to anything else, this whole concept confuses me because originally it was Byron and Rich.
Uh-huh.
And I would think they would be co-directors, right?
Or Jared was one of the writers of it. And so, like in what Frozen, when they brought on
Jennifer Lee
as one of the, she was one of the main writers. And so they brought her on because she was such integral in the story. They brought her on as an actual co-director.
But why are they not listed as co-directors? Because technically they are a co-director.
Yeah.
Why don't they have co-director next to their name, right? Because
there like a director shakeup there almost at the end, like the last year of production. They made some like story changes.
They did make changes. There was no changes in the directors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this is Byron Howard's idea. He had basically, he directed Tangled, and this was one of the, after Tangled, one of the very, nearly 5 years ago, this was one of the ideas that he presented. Now, I had the opportunity to interview the producer of Zootopia, Clark Spencer. He came to Atlanta, he was doing some press circuit, and so I was part of a round table, and I'll include a link in the show notes so everyone can read that. It is awesome, because he went into such depth, and there are really great questions that were asked. Yeah. And he talked about the beginning and the metamorphosis of this film. And initially, after Tangled, Byron Howard said, from the very beginning, and he said, I want this to be an anthropomorphized film. So he definitely went, even 5 years ago when it was just a concept, this was something that was very critical to him and his idea. So later, Rich Moore, who directed Wreck-It Ralph, was brought on more when it, you know, a few years later after Wreck-It Ralph had been released. And then obviously Jared Bush was added as well. So the budget is not known at this time. I'm sure with more time we will know that. But as of today, I'm recording this, it has made $223.9 million in the box office, which I'm That's pretty sure worldwide. It didn't cost that much to make. So boom.
Was that worldwide?
That's worldwide so far.
Okay.
It did break Frozen's record for opening weekend. So this is
This is totally going to overtake Frozen. It will overtake Minions.
It has beaten a lot of Frozen's records. However, I don't think it's going to beat Frozen's billion-dollar record.
Yeah, I don't. I feel like this is one that, just by the sheer fact that Frozen is princess, I don't know. I feel like it's going to be the one. It'll be longer to beat.
Yeah, I think this film's going to have a very, very, very good cinematic run, but it's not going to... Remember, Frozen's was sort of like Titanic, where it was 4 months later and it was still number one. I think this is going to be very, very strong for a few weeks to a month to two and go from there. So, but don't let me limit you, Zootopia. If you want to be a billion-dollar movie, you can do it.
We got you. We are all for that. I would actually be really, really excited if they did... hit and break all those records because it does. If it wrecks all those records, I'm really a big fan of this directorship. Rich Moore has been one of my favorite cartoon directors for the last 20 years. Once I realized like what he did, I was like, "You are one of my top guys. I love you." And Byron Howard, definitely younger and newer to the game, and yet he's had a lot of really good success and a lot of really great ideas, and so them together for me was one of the big excitement coming up to this movie. Even months ago when we weren't really hearing all of the details or all of the hype, like now everything is all hype, but months ago when there was just a little bit of hype, I was like really excited about this movie because of the directors.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's been doing good. And before we start our formal analysis, I just want to do a very special shout-out to the 20-somethings who were sitting behind us in the theater last night and who were talking the whole time and giving us very loud commentary. I really appreciate how much you talked during the film, especially given how much I spent of my hard-earned money on this film to watch this movie, only to hear you talk loudly and disrespectfully the whole time. I just want you to know that your commentary was really valuable. And so poignant and so intelligent that I think that Disney should hire you and put your loud, squeaky, annoying voices in the commentary track for the video release. So thank you. Thank you very much for disrupting my theater experience. Back to you guys.
How did you make your screen bigger?
If you are not watching the video version of the podcast, you need to go and find that moment in the podcast and watch it. Just that part.
Yes.
It'll be worth your while because that was an epic moment.
I I almost don't want to go to the theater anymore because people have so little respect for the rest of us. They think that the movie is there to comment on the whole movie. I'm a huge fan of horror movies. I can't even go to see horror movies. I'm not even going to see The Witch in theaters. I'm just going to wait till it's video release. But I don't know, man. People just have zero respect for, and something needs to be done. I would actually, I never talk about this, but I would actually approve federal legislation to regulate how little you can talk during a movie screening. I would even go to that length. But anyway.
Heard it first.
Wow.
Dictator Mason.
If I'm elected president, no one will talk during movies. There will be trap doors beneath every theater seat. And if you talk, people will pull the lever on you. Anyway. So Zootopia, I think we need to acknowledge the other elephant in the room, and that this film is obviously about the evils of walking around naked. There, I said it. Deal with it.
Whoa. I didn't realize this was a film.
This was all a gigantic social commentary about nakedness.
You know, I'm going to have to rewatch this whole movie with that perspective.
Anyway, but in all seriousness, I think unraveling the phenomenon of Disney's Zootopia starts with this fact. It is quite possibly Disney's most relevant and most contemporary animated film of all time. These animals in the film are literally us. The length of the metaphor is so paper thin. There's so many references to real life things, and I love that the animal jokes and the animal puns are seen in the world creation more than cheap dialogue like gags. Mm-hmm. Like Zuber instead of Uber, you know, the carrot logo on Judy's phone, you know, for Apple. And then like the bootleg films where he's like, I got the ones that aren't even out yet. He's got like Zootopia Moana, Zootopia Giants.
Was on there.
Yeah. Gigantic.
What was another one that Shanna pointed out? It was like Huffington Post or something. I don't know. So you could even make them up. There's all sorts of fun stuff. And just the fact that it was so true to real life, like today, cutting edge jokes.
Well, if you are a follower of the Disney Animation Instagram account, which I totally recommend because they put out great stuff every time that any of these movies comes out, they always have some great things. And for this one, they've been putting out a lot of fake movie art, which is something that's not new. I mean, a lot of movies have done that, but they really, the animal puns in this are just fantastic. So go check them out. Give them a follow.
Oh, the Easter eggs page for this film is going to be crazy.
Hmm. Yes. Very, very, very long.
Yeah.
So talking about that and how it was very self-referential to our real life, the real modern society that we live in, how did you feel about that? Because in my interview with Clark, he mentioned that they acknowledged that these references might not make sense in 30 years. And that is something that I thought when you're mentioning Zuber and the Apple phone, you know, right now it's totally relevant and it is part of our world. But in 30 years, are we going to look back like we do with many films and think, ugh, that's super dated. That's old. Because they didn't care. I personally feel that it does slightly cheapen the film just because I prefer when films are kept timeless in a way. But Disney's done this, you know, 55 plus times before with other films. I mean, why not have a little fun this time around? And
don't worry, Moana's going to be very timeless.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And you know what? We may have said this back, you know, in the 50s and 60s when 101 Dalmatians came out. Like, wow, such a contemporary film. And we look back at that, and maybe that's because that era is now considered timeless in a way. Maybe not. I don't look back.
2016, guys. It'll live forever.
Do you think people ever refer to the year 2016 as a timeless era?
That's fine.
We're going to do Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet set in the timeless period of 2016. You know, like, that just sounds so weird to me. But anyway, it might happen.
Well, right now, have you thought about it? We are in the teens of these years. In 4 years, we're going to be in the 20s. We can no longer say back in the 20s.
We can still say back in the 20s.
Well, you can still say it, but, you
because
know.
Because we have to be out of the 20s to sure. talk about back in the 20s, right? So and only in the 30s out of the 20s. Problem.
I will say that I have definitely been that person who said back in aught 5. I say that. Yes, I do. Yeah. And it makes me happy.
Also, Duke of Weaseltown. Oh. Anyway.
So amazing.
You know, it's another part of like unlocking the like phenomenon of Zootopia is that it's crazy because it took the formula that so many animated films before it have tried, but we all roll our eyes at, like we reject it. And I'm talking about the blatant pop culture references, the like a huge amount of big name Hollywood stars on your cast, you know, music featuring, you know, contemporary pop singers, you know, at least they recorded a new track for this film, not used old, you know, pop songs. And then the mandatory character dance party at the end, like you think I could very well be describing Madagascar or Romeo and Juliet or Shark Tale, you know? So how come viewers rolled their eyes at these films being like, oh, they always have to have the dance party. They always have to have a ton of irrelevant Hollywood stars, blah, blah, blah. So how come they rolled their eyes at those films, but everybody seems to be embracing Zootopia for using the exact same ingredients? Chelsea, in the back.
So I realized it was because they worked it in through the whole thing. Because they brought Shakira or, you know, well, Gazelle in there as the pop star from the beginning. They kind of built it up. She was a presence, and she was that thing off to the side. And come on, everybody wants to go to her dance party. Everybody wants that app to dance along with the tigers, you know? So I think that was one of the main things is everyone was kind of like, yeah, let's go. So it wasn't necessarily all right, guys, it's a wedding. We're going to dance party, you know?
I think another reason is because it wasn't like the central thing, like, oh, we got to do all these gags. We got to do this. I think they focused on the story first and making sure that the story, which happened to be set in a modern time, that was set, that was good. And then maybe the pop culture or some of the gags came before the story, because we know that the story was kind of revamped about a year ago. But I felt like because the story was the main focus, it allowed us to have some fun with these ancillary elements rather than vice versa. I think a lot of times if you have a poor story, you might try to overcompensate by like, let's just throw in this gag or this thing or this or that or fart joke or dance party at the end, which doesn't work because by that point you're already irritated and frustrated. While this just seems like a fun.
Okay. All right. So it wasn't all about those ingredients to the formula.
No, if I were to describe this film, I wouldn't even describe it very much as pop culture-y.
It's just, it's
whatnot.
Just literally 2016, the animal movie.
Yep.
But anyway, I mean, it's not like Gazelle is the main character. She's just like in there a few times. Anyway.
They gave her, I think, a good amount. I mean, the fact that they had her in there as that.
She was protesting at the end. Like she was like an ambassador for, you know, for.
Celebrities love to do.
Yeah, that's what celebrities causes. Love to do.
And, I know. And so anyway, I think she fit. Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I think that some of it might be pre-biased towards Disney, but I think that'd be too cynical to actually make that my only reason for why Zootopia pulled it off while other films haven't. But anyway, so the animation itself was phenomenal. Like, I was blown away by the animation. I would even say, like, it has some of those flawless CG animation that I've seen in a while. I think the last film where I was, you know, as a person who studies animation, like semi-professionally and like academically and all that stuff, not that I'm like a huge deal or anything, but I do pay attention to stuff. I think Tangled was the last CG animated film where I really felt like I was watching characters that were alive, that were living. I really don't think Wreck-It Ralph approached this level of really effective animation, and I don't know why. But anyway, the rigging and animation team for Zootopia deserves huge congratulations. And I think one of the most effective characters, probably the most effective character, was Judy Hopps, because her personality was just so clearly there. Like, you get her shape language in her, like the character model, she's very circular because she's just that kind of character. But it's in the way that she walks. It's in the way she speaks, her facial expressions. And then you contrast that with Nick Wilde, who's very angular because he's supposed to be sinister and the bad guy. He's rough around the edges. And I like his animation because he usually leads with the head and his spine, torso, and hips follow. So he has not a serpentine motion, but he has a very predatory motion leading with his head. And obviously, and I did hear a rumor that his animation was like supposed to be modeled a little after Robin Hood, but I don't know how authentic that is. So even when Beauty delivered her dialogue, there were like zero like gaps. There was no empty space while she was talking. You could see every thought process, like every intricacy of her feelings there in the performance. And that's just amazing. And y'all got to realize that, yes, the animation artist pulls it off, but there is a team of technical people who make it so that they can pull off those emotions. And those people can never be overlooked, because I'll be one of them one day.
Let's keep Mason a job. One thing that I think is really important when we're talking about this film and the characters and the story is that the story changed over time, as most animated films do. But this one particularly, about a year before the release date, you know, even just last year, 2015, it went a major overhaul. And I did talk to Clark Spencer about this in my interview, and he says it was he considered that one of his greatest achievements in the film is when they realized the story wasn't working, because what initially happened was the story was about Nick, and he was the main character and the protagonist. And then he and Judy get framed for, you know, something, and they have to work together. And Judy is already on the force and whatnot. But they realized very quickly that we're telling you that Zootopia is this amazing place with all these great things, that it's a place where you can do anything. And then we're featuring a main character who doesn't believe that because of his backstory and what has happened to him and the stereotypes that have been played into for him in his life. And so it was hard for the audience to believe him and to care, because he was so cynical. Why would I root for you? And so Mark Spencer said one of his, you know, greatest achievements in the film was when they realized it wasn't working, that he was calm, he didn't freak out, and he allowed the directors to make the movie and the story where it needed to
be. Isn't that great to hear a producer say that?
Oh, yeah. A lot of times.
Did the guy say that?
A lot of producers say, no, you know, we got to stick to the course. You know, it's a year out. We know this is somewhat working. I think producers sometimes have the stereotype of being the suit, meaning the money guy who's in charge of production, and make sure the schedule's on schedule, and that, you know, we have the right amount of bodies and money going into this, you know, and he is an MBA from Harvard, you know, so that's like very stereotypical suit. And so there's kind of this stereotype about producers that they don't understand the creative process. And just talking with him, I mean, he clearly loves the studio, the film, the process. And I'm glad, you know, he and the team did that, because having Judy as the main character is absolutely why this works. Everyone loves Judy. They say, oh, she's such a great character. You relate to her. And she's wonderful.
Yeah. She's like Anna. She's flawless with flaws. Eh?
It's a good one. And this film, while some of the themes are things we've seen before, I mean, we've all seen like the wide-eyed newcomer who goes into the new place and thinks that the world is their oyster and they can do anything. And then the real world takes over and they realize, man, it's not what I thought it was. And they get down on their jumps and whatnot. And then at the end, they're able to overcome and achieve. That's very stereotypical as far as a plot line goes, but just the way that they were able to tell that story was so much different because of the buddy cop aspect and the mystery and utopia.
I feel like they got that out of the way. Like that was the story for the first 20 minutes. And then the story changed, and that was no longer the main focus of her coming in feeling like she was kind of down and out. But now it's her overcoming, but not only overcoming, but also it comes into the whole suspense thriller, like mystery solving thing.
Oh, man, it's gritty. It's like noir for animals.
Yeah, and it just goes route that you don't expect, and that is so not one of those that's it's so not what you would expect to come out.
It's like the Maltese Falcon, you know, at the end they have the night howl and they're like, what's this, and Judy's like, the stuff that dreams are made of. Anyway, I thought the movie was great and as a whole. And what I really like is that there's so many kooky characters in this film. I have a breakout character that I really thought really shined through in this film, and that was Clawhauser. He was like a huge breakout character for me. I just thought he was pretty hilarious. Like, he was really cute, and I loved just how into Gazelle he was and all this stuff. And he was just like very happy and like very sensitive to others and things like that.
Clearly the opposite of what
breaks the mold of the pushy secretary or the bored secretary. Well, and
the fact that he was
police officer,
and he was one of the
predators.
And he was a predator, which is significant because when you see how Judy's kind of irresponsible remarks at the press conference affect him, it's really heartbreaking because you get to see the effect on someone as nice and gentle as he is.
Just likable in general.
He's super likable. And then the only thing that I thought was really weird was like, okay, so the old donut lodged in the neck fat gag, like, I get it, but it's like, okay, I get that he clearly overeats, but like, I thought this film was about confronting stereotypes. So why the fat joke? I don't know. Apparently those are timeless.
Because the donut eating cop is a timeless thing.
apparently. But anyway. And then there's Flash the Sloth. So the sloth sequence was, Shanna went and saw it with me last night. This was by far her favorite part of the film. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was going to be overdone because they talked about it so much in the trailers. But anyway, what did y'all think of it?
Yeah, I went into this and Chelsea and I were talking about it before we saw the film. I'm like, I wonder if that scene, well, first off, I didn't know if that scene was going to be in the film, because a lot of times for some trailers, they create whole new stories or like little mini vignettes that don't actually, aren't even a part of the story. So I was wondering, one, is this even going to be a part of the film, or was this just a really clever scene that they created that we're not going to use? It did not end up being that way. And two, is this going to be overdone where I don't think it's funny? It was funny. And what I was even more surprised is how much slower it was in the film. They had cut a lot of the pauses and waiting and silence because it was a trailer and they needed to kind of speed it along as fast as they could. And so that's what shocked me, is just it was even longer and more gruesome and painful.
It was great.
Painful. Okay.
I love that not only did he talk slow, but he kept adding unnecessary words to the end of his sentences.
A flat.
Hey. Yeah. What was the girl's name? It's like, hey, Rita, or what's
the other sloth?
The other sloth. It was
Kristen Bell.
Kristen Bell. Which, what was really funny is when I first saw that she was tagged as the sloth, in like they had a press release of all the characters and all the names and people that are going to be in the film, and I saw that she was tagged as a sloth, and I just laughed in my heart because I was like, "Aw, the Kristen Bell sloth meltdown video, awesome!" And then Morgan later on, she had no idea that that was what they were referring to. I was like, "What?
Way to call me out, sorry, meaty head."
It was funny though.
Well, initially I was like, "Oh, cool, she has a cameo," and I didn't think anything of it. And then I'm like, "Oh, it's called the sloth video. Got it. I'm a sloth."
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So I like that. Of course, like they're there so long that it's nighttime by the time they're there. And I love Nick Wilde's face during the whole thing.
He's
like,
so
that's a troll face, man.
Yes. The troll.
Should have been a part where, if this was my movie, I would have just superimposed the troll face on the guy, like, and I would just zoom in on. Anyway, but I relate to the troll face while I'm messing with people. Yeah, so I felt like I could really relate to Nick in that scene. But anyway, so yeah, Clawhauser, Flash the Sloth, and then Mr. Big. I never do this in movie theaters. I was literally laughing uncontrollably during Mr. Big, during the entire segment. Like, I even saw the previews and knew what I was getting into, but everything, like, his voice was just so squeaky and so much like in The Godfather. And like, I suppressed it really well. Like, I am very respectful in the movie theater, unlike some people. But anyway, it was still uncontrollable. It was uncontrollable, barely suppressed laughter. I'm surprised that I found something so blatantly derivative, so hilarious. But I did, like,
I thought it was so funny. It's like, you come into my house. We broke bread together. Grandmama made you a cannoli.
I can't even do his voice. It's just so perfect.
But one thing about that, we were talking in my interview that, you know, they knew it was self-referential, and they even, you know, some of the lines were ripped basically from The Godfather. And what they did do is they had an actor and they brought him in, and they had, he was basically a Marlon Brando impersonator who impersonated the voice to a T. It wasn't trying to put his own spin on it. He was doing the exact scene. And then what they did is they sped it up and made it very high pitched, which, you know, makes it work. But that's a little behind the scenes about that, which I thought was really fun. And you know what? It's funny because I saw that. I'm like, oh, The Godfather, one of the most iconic films of my time. They're ripping it off. But it totally works because their world is a representation of our world in a way, as if it evolved in a different way. And of course they have a Godfather, and instead of it being humans, it's a little Arctic shrew, which is, and it's so great. I love the scene. You know, you see the polar bears and you think like, oh, it's going to be big, big polar bear. And then it's him. And my favorite, one of my favorite scenes is at the wedding where they're dancing and the polar bears are just all standing around being bodyguards. So good. And I loved how there's just different moments or people that Judy interacted with, like that girl that she saved, like, oh, thank you. Darling. Love your hair. And later, you know, she turned out like,
oh, anybody at my wedding. I have to, darling.
But daddy. That's the one, Daddy.
It was really good. So I did enjoy that part, and I loved it. I like the little twists and turns and way they were tying things back.
It's really curious because Mr. Big is apparently the most notorious crime boss in Zootopia, but crime boss of what? Like, is he like the bootleg popsicle mastermind of the nation or something? Or like, what? How deep does it go? Because he's not afraid to kill animals in freezing ice cold water. Maybe he just threatens them. But anyway, I love how everyone apparently loves The Godfather. It's supposed to be like the greatest film of our time. Or I like Citizen Kane better. Actually, Ralph Bakshi doesn't like The Godfather, so go, man. But I mean, am I the only one who had a problem with how it was pretty much no big deal that they were working with a major crime boss? Like, I don't know.
Do what you gotta do.
Apparently, one of the morals of the story is that it's okay to collaborate with the mafia to.
It happens. Yeah, you know what? In the end credit scene, which got unfortunately, they don't show you where Judy and Nick actually arrest him. You know, saying thanks for your help, but no thanks.
Really?
No. Okay.
Like, hey.
So. And then there's this other shrew who comes out with a grenade launcher and say hello to my little friends. But anyway, wrong movie. Anyway, oh, also, speaking of characters, Mason Smith totally called it months ago that the mayor was going to be the bad guy. And I was partially right. And you can cite this. It's on rotoscopers.com in one of the message boards for one of the articles. But I was partially right. And then Disney comes out and pulls out another surprise villain. Dun, dun, dun. That is sneaky. I knew something bad was going to happen when they're like, okay, we'll make it to the police station through this dark, spooky, abandoned, you know, under construction museum. You know, I was like, oh, someone's going to jump them. And as soon as I saw Bellwether, who you think is the good guy, I was like, uh-oh, something's going on here. Apparently Shanna knew that it was Bellwether when she saw that the sheep or the goats were in on the meth lab, not the meth lab, the howl, night howl lab. Hey, did you get it when he turned around? He's like, all right, let me get Walter and Jesse in here.
I don't think Chelsea got it. So in Breaking Bad, Walter and Jesse are the two guys who make the meth.
I've never watched a single episode of Breaking Bad.
Laughing at that. And yeah, it's another very self-referential, it's not referencing Disney, but it's referencing our culture and, you know, things that are very big. And the meth lab duo in the little trailer is very iconic now. You know, it's kind of getting up there. It's with, you know, The Godfather and things that will be, our generation will be known for, I guess,
yeah.
When aliens visit this planet, they were like, boy, they really liked methamphetamines. Or they didn't. A lot of people didn't do it. They just idolized the people that made them. But anyway, this is highly illogical. But anyway, I totally called it. I knew that whenever you have one of these societal references, the guy in charge is always the bad guy. He's always the careless, the reckless capitalist, or the careless, slumlord, or, whatever. It's like Ned Beatty's character on Rango. You know, it's so obvious that he's the bad guy because he's the guy in charge, you know. But anyway, again, I was partially right. I like how he just doesn't care. The mayor, is it Lionheart, I guess? He just goes to jail and he's like totally fine with it. He's like, yeah, whatever. I did it. I protect the cities. I guess it was a mistake. But now I'm in prison. I get free room and board and meals. But anyway, it's pretty interesting. I wonder if the plot was a little rushed, but I kind of liked the twist at the end.
Yeah, one thing I loved about this film, that it was this mystery buddy cop film that we haven't seen in a long time, basically since The Great Mouse Detective. We haven't seen this mystery whodunit caper sort of film. So I really enjoyed that because it was a genre of filmmaking and storytelling that we don't see all the time in animation. And, you know, animation is not a genre. It has the ability to tell lots of genres or tell a story. So this was one we were able to go back into, which I enjoyed for Disney, having not done that for a while. So,
yeah.
And so going back, like, we aren't really going chronologically through this, but there were so many points in this film that it just went from scene to scene to scene. And that may have seemed rushed to some people, but I thought it worked so well, you know, because there's this mystery of the otter going missing. And so they were following his footsteps. But before we do that, we see Nick with the heist that he pulls in the elephant popsicle shop, and what he's able to do there, basically to resell it and make some profit and then tie that to the otter. And then the otter is actually like secretly a nudist and goes to this place. And it just snowballs from there and all these cool places we get to explore in Zootopia.
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah, I didn't think it was rushed per se. I thought there was a ton of dialogue in the movie, which is kind of weird, but I mean, it's not Pixar. But the action just worked. I love the, I think one of my favorite action sequences in the film is when Judy is pursuing the Took of Weaseltown through the tiny people land, or the tiny animal land. And she's like careful not to like make all the houses like fall over and all this stuff. And she's walking around and people are screaming like she's Godzilla. And she saves the mob boss's Mr. Big's daughter from the giant donut and all this stuff. But I love the little tubes while he's on the railroad track and he's like having to squeeze himself in all the different tube things. It really worked. It's like, that's how you use animation to make a chase scene entertaining. That's what, that's what separates this from just a regular crime show, like, 22 Jump Street or something like that. I don't know. Something that's got like high action, but also humor.
So how do you feel about the actual plot point of it being these animals going feral?
Oh, I love that my drug message. And I thought it was really interesting. I thought it was scary. Like, I've been checking out like the movie reviews and the buzz, what the public have said about the film. And a lot of, I won't say overly concerned parents, but parents who probably took their kids to the theater when they like their 3-year-olds to the theater or something like that, have complained that the movie was very frightening in some scenes. Like, there's a lot of jump scares. There's a lot of,
It was PG, right? Like,
PG.
People actually don't watch that anymore. Like, no, if it's PG-13 and above, then okay, I'm not taking my kid. But PGG, same thing.
Oh, dude, I've heard horror stories of how young a kids were going to see Deadpool when it came out.
Oh,
I know. Heaven help us. But anyway,
that scene reminded me of the scary scene where they're going feral. And this is a comparison that probably no one has made of this film to this other Zootopia. We're back. When the dinosaurs are going back to their feral nature, and they're in, and you go and you see them behind bars, and that's probably a little scarier. That is a very frightening scene.
That one is, yeah.
But, this was...
Well, screw eyes and...
Yes.
Oh, yeah, there was definitely something there, because it's a not... screw eyes he's obsessed with fear. He wants to instill fear, and the whole point of the... What is it? Night Howler pandemic or crisis was to instill fear of these supposedly savage predators. And I thought that was pretty interesting. I think that using fear of different groups for the purpose of gaining political power is very relevant. And the movie was very, very literal with it. But anyway, I thought that there are some shots where they're going through that lab and there's all the animals in cages and they look up and the panther from the jungle area was there. And all that stuff, like the lighting is very creepy. We haven't even talked about like the lighting and the texturing in this film. Like, we're so spoiled, like we take it for granted, but it was very beautiful. I'm guessing they used an updated version of the Hyperion engine from Big Hero 6, but overall the lighting is pretty brilliant. Actually, Kelly, one of my my director from when I was working on a short film at A&M, she was a lighting apprentice for this film. She's actually in the credits, which is cool. Go Aggies! Whoop!
Shout out.
Huh?
Shout out. So what were some other scenes that you liked in the film or characters, plot points?
There's something to be said about Idris Elba and how and Bogo's character. I really like him. He's very tough on Judy. Like, he is the forefront of telling her that she cannot follow her dreams, and yet there was never a part in the film where I disrespected him, because Idris Elba just commands this presence with his voice. And so I don't know how they did it with the film, but he ended up being a respectable character, and I'm glad he wasn't a villain. I'm glad he was just the slow and steady influence of justice and tradition, I guess.
Yeah, he wasn't going to give her any, you know, preferential treatment or go soft on her because she was new. Like, this is what it is, so take it and leave it. I like at the very end of her first day, she's in her apartment, and then there's
those two dudes.
You guys, and you could hear them through the wall, and they're yelling at
really loud. We're not apologizing.
And then she has the carrots for one TV dinner, and yeah, it's like shriveled. Oh, so good. Like, every scene basically was super, I don't want to say memorable, because you can't necessarily call it to memory at this point in time, but just, they were great, and it definitely served its purpose in that time.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many cool parts of the film. Like, the action was really good, like I said. The detective parts were really cool.
The part where, you know, Judy one-upped Nick, you know, so initially he's, you know, she records him with the pen later and then uses that again.
Hustle, honey.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. I also liked
he gets tax evasion.
Oh yeah, that too. That's pretty clever. And then it's actually really scary. Then I like how Nick and his compadre, like, they use all the different environments to make their bootleg popsicles.
Mm-hmm.
And they go out to Tundra Town and they dig the little paw prints and stuff. And I just thought it was really funny. But yeah, a lot of really funny parts. And when some people attribute this to, like, weird characterization, like Nick Wilde's character wasn't very consistent, but I loved when Assistant Mayor Bellwether is looking up the traffic cams in her office, and Nick is, like, playing with her hair, and he's like, normally sheep would never let me get this close, but her hair's so fluffy. And all that stuff. I liked it a lot. Fur in this film, like the technical achievements of the fur was just mind-boggling. As I understand it, that was one of the biggest challenges in the film.
In my interview, I asked, you know, what is the biggest technical challenge? You know, with Frozen, it was snow. With Tangled, it was hair. And he says fur. He said even in when they were making Bolt or other movies, they make one character, they make one model for hair, and then they, you know, change the color, make it curly, blah, blah, blah. Even in Bolt, they use human hair on the animal. So they didn't go and actually...
Everybody pretty much has the same hair plug-in or hair shader. It's just colored.
But for this, there were 64 species of animals in the film, and they made sure that every animal had hair that was very realistic to that creature. I think it shows a lot of detail and a lot of work that went into this.
Yes.
Contrast Judy's fur with Yak's and his, like, scraggly, mangy hair, you know. There is so much, like, I guess you could say, variety. And And man, that's a huge technical achievement. People don't know, but your render times just go through the roof when you're trying to do hair. It's pretty interesting. Yeah. So anyway, all in all, I came through this. I came out of this film smiling and satisfied and slimy yet satisfying. But that has nothing to do with this. But I thought it was. I thought it would be worth it to address the dissenters. So if you go to RottenTomatoes.com, out of the 142 critics' reviews that gave ratings for Zootopia, only two out of 142 gave it a rotten rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Now, before all of our listeners go out and grab their torches and pitchforks, I want to ask, did you actually read them? Like, I thought that I read both of them because there's only two. It takes like 5 minutes of your time. Both had a lot of good things to say about the film. But I think both of them seem to think that the... well, actually, one of them thought that the anti-prejudice message was inappropriate totally. Like, kids should not be exposed to prejudice, even in animated films, even if the main message of the film is against prejudice. And
welcome to the real world.
Yeah, honey. I mean, like...
What I
introduced to it at some point.
Yeah, I think the same one also said that they didn't like that in the film. It's unrealistic in how the predators don't eat prey. Like, it distorts the reality that actual animals really don't live well together in nature. And I'm like, yeah, but this isn't nature. This is us. Like, Zootopia is us. It's not nature. Like, go see Watership Down if you want a naturalistic representation of how predators act around prey.
It's a movie, exactly. I mean, we get to tell the story that we want, and it's these are talking animals.
Yeah.
Why are we trying to say that this misrepresents what really happens in the world? This is nothing to what really happens.
Right. It's like, you know, did you think, were you mad at Shark Tale for not accurately representing, you know, underwater car washes in the Great Barrier Reef? You know. Anyway, they probably like Finding Nemo, though. And here are a couple points that I kind of start to agree with. They say that the film, it speaks out against stereotyping, obviously, but it uses animal stereotypes for cheap laughs, according to them. So they said, like, all sloths are slow in the movie. All the wolves howl uncontrollably, which was hilarious. Everybody was laughing during that part. But it's like...
Start it!
Yeah, you'll start a howl. I can't help it. I like their faces. They're just... and so they argue that that people, yeah, but it's just in their biology to be slow. But isn't the movie about, you know, it's not in your biology? You can't say that. So I don't know. They also were confused that the animals live in kind of segregated biomes, like Tundra Town, the desert district, or whatever. Despite the film's message about this melting pot, about diversity, about animals living alongside each other. And I thought about that too, and I was like, yeah, why are they kind of separated? But
even though we live in a society that, you know, that we want to be diverse,
yeah,
for humans, and there are certain things that make us different. And with these animals, if I am a tundra animal, I need to spend the majority of my time in cold areas. It's what I like.
Yeah. And it's So it's not that they're around their own kind. It's that they're in an environment where they feel comfortable. So I totally get that. Like, I believe that they were going a little too far in it. But what was really interesting is that a lot of my peers, like in the Viz program here at A&M and just thumbing through social media, this happens a lot in animated films. The attitude of people who really enjoy, who are really like very, very much fans of a certain film, and they see that someone didn't like it. A lot of my peers were pretty upset that these two reviewers like dared to give Zootopia a rotten score. And by rotten, I don't think they didn't give them like a 20% or like a half star, one star. I think they were like 2.5 stars, what they gave it. But it reminded me of something that Mayor Bellwether said there in the third act, and I'm just going to adapt it for Rotten Tomatoes. You know, positive reviews of Zootopia outnumber negative reviews 70-1. United against a common enemy will be unstoppable. So. Don't be like Mayor Bellwether, and you know, give the dissenters a chance. Even though you may be convinced that the film is flawless and can never be anything bad about it, you know, I always enjoy reading the other side of the arguments for whether an animated film is good or not. Anyway, like I said, I really enjoyed the film. Like, as a whole, I liked Zootopia. I enjoyed it more than Frozen. I enjoyed it more than Wreck-It Ralph. It's really neck and neck there with Tangled. And I really, really, really wanted to give it a 5-star rating. But. Like, okay, well, let me just go on with why I wanted to give it a 5-star rating. I was totally captivated by the first few minutes of the film. Like, I was hooked. Like, little Judy and her cute little dramatic, like, play about the history of Zootopia and stuff. And the way they set up her story, you know, from when she was very young, it got me so excited to learn more about Judy and watch her be the cop that she wants to be. And within... this never happens to me. Within the first couple of minutes, I was ready to declare Zootopia the perfect CG animated film. And I'm not lying. That's not hyperbole. Like, I was totally prepared to give it the coveted Mason 5-star rating. So what changed? And I hope that no one takes this the wrong way. And I know I'm not the only person who feels this. I love the message of giving all animals a chance that, you know, you can, in a world where you can be anyone, you must be kind. You know, I totally love that, and I subscribe to that, and I try to make that one of the tenets of how I live my life. But man, I haven't felt so strongly and forcefully preached to since I watched Horton Hears a Who. I'm sorry, like, please don't get me wrong. Like, the anti-prejudice message in Zootopia is inherently good. Like, we need it. Highly relevant. But Disney's method of delivering said message, in my opinion, was uncharacteristically heavy-handed. And a lot of it had to do with the dialogue. So let me explain before everyone, like, starts shooting arrows at me or whatever. Steve Hickner, he has this rule about storytelling that's called show me, don't tell me. I felt like throughout the film, rather than showing us the terrible effects of prejudice and how to overcome it and work together to overcome it, I felt like through the dialogue, they were telling me that it was wrong rather than showing me that it was wrong. And it started nearly a second after the first scene, like Judy's folks walk her out of the play and they're at the fair or whatever. And I think the dad says something like, you know, it's okay to have dreams as long as you don't believe in them that much, too much. And I'm like, what a blatant, cheap way of delivering that line. Like, isn't there a more creative way to say that Judy's parents don't share her belief that she can be anything she wants to be? I don't know. And it was pretty much nonstop throughout the film. And so contrast that to the scene in the one scene in Zootopia that I felt wasn't like totally inundated with dialogue. And coincidentally, the scene that impacted me the most was when Nick Wilde explains to Judy why he puts on his face of confidence and obliviousness to everyone around him, despite the fact that he's this kind of hated animal. When he reveals his past and what happened when he tried to join like the Ranger Scouts or whatever, like they show us what happened to him rather than him telling us what happened. And that was the most powerful part of the film for me. And I really think that I wish the whole film could have been like that. And of course, Zootopia has a very heavy social commentary, and I think it was a little too heavy sometimes. Like, I really didn't. Maybe people need to help me out with this, but I really didn't get the part where Judy tells Clawhauser that like only rabbits can call each other cute without it being offensive. Like, no one in the theater laughed at that gag, and it was just kind of awkward. And I felt like that part was counterproductive to the message of the film. I felt that it put up a wall instead of bringing the two animals together, like the message of the film should be. And so, I don't know, I only saw it last night. Yeah, I only saw it last night, and I have to kind of think through it some more, but I do feel like the message was heavy-handed at times. And so, I mean, that's just my opinion. I don't know if I'm alone in this or not, but that's the reason why I don't consider Zootopia to be the perfect CG animated film, although in the beginning, I was totally prepared to do that. And
what would you rate it?
Four stars. I'll give it 4 stars. It's a very, very good animated film, and I really enjoyed it.
So I'm going to give it 4.5 stars, and a very strong 4.5 stars. I left this movie. I loved the film. I was talking about it, and I was telling everyone. Even today, I told someone, you have to go see it. It is so good. It is very, very strong. And when you compare this to Big Hero 6, it blows Big Hero 6 out of the water. I love this film so much more than Big Hero 6. Not saying that Big Hero 6 is a bad film, but this movie was witty. It was very, had pop culture references, but done in the right way. It had this mystery buddy cop element that it was just very intriguing. It was funny. It was well done. I thought all of the characters were very, very well thought out and fleshed out. I thought that Judy was a very strong character, as well as Nick, and they paired very nicely together. So not a five-star film, with the Beauty and the Beasts of the world, I guess, but very great and a wonderful showing by Walt Disney Animation Studios.
Yeah.
Shows that they are on their A game right now. That is the place to be.
Yeah, A game is definitely it. Like, Disney is coming in strong, and I cannot wait for Moana.
I am really excited for them too. But okay, as far as Zootopia goes, I left the theater being so just very content with how everything worked out. I liked it. I left a very happy feeling, but at the same time, I had a hard time putting a rating to this film. It was just one of those strange ones. I think because of all of the nuances and all the tracks that it took you down, you didn't quite know where, I didn't know where to quite put it. And so it was one that I was like, I really wanted to see again before we did this episode. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to. Like, a lot of people have been saying, oh my gosh, best Disney movie ever. And I really can't say that. But like I said in my other review, it is very consistently great with all of the fantastic movies that have been coming out. I'm going to split the difference, 4.25 stars for you guys.
4.25? You can't do that. Only Myra can do that.
I've done it before. I can do it again.
Heard it first. All right. So we are going to move into our voicemail segment. We had four voicemails, and so let's jump right into them. Our first one is from first-time caller Jesse.
Hi, Rotoscopers. My name is Jesse Jacobson, calling to you from Orem, Utah. I've been a follower of your podcast and website since 2012, although this is my first time calling in and leaving a voicemail, so I'm pretty excited. I have loved following you guys, and I just got home from serving a mission for my church, and so it's been fun to catch up on all of the old podcasts that I missed, and I'm so glad that you guys are still going strong, and congratulations for hitting over 100 episodes. I just think that's incredible, and I've just loved being able to hear your thoughts and feel like I've made friends who have the same passion as me, and so it's really fun to listen to you guys. I just thought I would call in and leave my review for Zootopia. I saw it opening night, and I'm super excited to hear all of your thoughts on this film. I personally thought that it was just fantastic. I would say besides Tangled, it was probably the best film that Disney Animation has put out recently. And I love buddy cop films. I love mysteries, and so I'm particularly fond of Zootopia. I love the world that they created. I loved the mystery element, and I just thought that all the characters had really good character development, especially Nick Wilde, who is now one of my favorite Disney characters. I thought the animation was obviously just gorgeous, and the music was beautiful, the score was, and then of course Try Everything by Shakira. It's super catchy, and I actually really love that song. I was worried when they first announced that Shakira was going to be singing a song for Zootopia, but it worked out really well. And I loved the plot twist of the villain. Spoilers to everybody who hasn't watched it. I just thought that everything worked out really well, with having the assistant mayor come out as the villain. As their message was about prejudices and those that are oppressed, I thought it was interesting that they took someone who was oppressed and had them oppress the other people that were the ones that were being prejudiced against them. So it was kind of a really interesting take that I thought was very bold. And I, speaking of that whole message, I thought that it was handled just perfectly. I felt like they didn't push it on you too much. And I thought that, you know, it was a great message about equality, but it wasn't too one-sided. It was very well-rounded, and just all of us need to just try a little bit better. And I loved everything about this film. I honestly.
All right, there you have it.
You left us in suspense. Honestly, what?
Well, thanks, Jesse, for calling in. So he triggered some things that we didn't talk about. So the music, mm-hmm. done by Michael Giacchino. This is his very first animated film that he's done for Disney. He has a few shorts for Disney, like The Ballad of Nessie and a few other things, How to Hook Up Your Home Theater, other ones like that. And I thought the score was great. But then there's Shakira's song, and that's, I agree with Jesse, when it was announced Shakira was going to be a character in the film, let alone having a song in the film, I was like, oh, no, Disney, you're better than that. But, you know, she was always...
always like Shakira.
I have nothing wrong with Shakira, but I'm the pop star as your main person. Yeah. And what I liked about her is she wasn't the main character. She was always she was always present, so you remembered her and knew that she was there, you know, through the app and through her. The very first thing you walk in is Zootopia. Welcome to Zootopia, blah, blah, blah. And then at the very end, the culmination with her actually seeing her. Well, we saw her at the rally, and then we saw her in the flesh later. So, good payoff.
Yeah, I enjoyed her song. I heart Shakira. She's great. So,
all right, our next one is from Rachel.
Hi, Rotoscopers. It's Rachel. I'm excited to hear your thoughts on Zootopia. I really, really enjoyed it. I've actually seen it twice, and I thought it was really creative and just a lot of fun. And I did hear an interesting point of view, though, from a friend of mine, where he said that the last four Disney movies have all had surprise, unexpected villains. And I thought that was actually a good point, that, you know, we've had in Big Hero 6, and Wreck-It Ralph, and Frozen. And now in Zootopia, they've all had these sort of surprise villains as opposed to like Mother Gothel and Tangled. And I was just wondering what you thought about that. And, you know, if you'd like the sort of the more traditional or if you like the surprise villain better. So thanks so much. Bye.
That's interesting that she puts it in comparison with Mother Gothel. And you see that that is kind of the traditional way of, you enter the protagonist, enter the antagonist together, and it's their build up together mm-hmm. until the end, and then it comes and everything is resolved in some way, shape, or form. And it is very different how this trend that they're on. It almost makes you expect the unexpected.
Like, I wasn't expecting it in this film because
they've done it so many times.
I don't know. I just felt like they've done it so many times. Like, yeah, like, mm-hmm. why would they do it again? But this film didn't actually, like, I wasn't leading thinking, like, who is the villain? Well, maybe I was, because there was this mystery of, like, it was more like, I'm trying to uncover what's happening.
Yeah.
But that I wasn't necessarily trying to think if this was a villain. I just wanted to uncover the case.
Right.
Which, obviously, there is a villain mastermind behind that, but that wasn't the focus.
Right.
But initially, once we did find out, yeah.
I feel like Judy and Nick are racing, like fighting against time, and like it's more in pursuit of like solving the mystery and finding the otter, Emmett Otterton, rather than there's this villain that they're working against. In fact, there really isn't a bad guy in the film until maybe the very, very end when they introduce the guys who grow the whatever, the night.
We didn't call him not Howlers. Okay, we didn't talk about him very much. I liked him. The
bigot is from the south. But anyway, I really liked him at the end where he's like, that was coming from a lot of self-doubt from my childhood that arose in aggression. And stuff. Like, aw, you've been having sessions. Good on you, man. He's a big man to admit that.
All right, next one is from Dylan. Check it out.
Hi, Rotoscopers. This is Dylan Mentis, and I just had the most beautifully Disney night. I bought a Mickey Mouse decal for my car, and I just saw Zootopia. For starters, this might possibly be my favorite movie in the revival era. Maybe. Right when this movie started, I felt at home. It almost goes without saying, but the animation was gorgeous. Like that scene in the beginning when Judy's on the train going into Zootopia and it brings you through all the different lands. Ah, Disney magic. What really shines, though, is the story, which on the outside is kind of a caper slash mystery, but what it's really about is our differences and history. Shout out to Disney for making a movie about race relations by using animals. The cleverly written dialogue and characters mirrored so much of the issues that the world is having today. This is a very special film, and I believe that everybody could benefit from watching and taking the lessons to heart. Some might say that it could be a little heavy-handed for kids in general, but I think it was tastefully done, and I believe this movie could help change people, can help change the world, which is the magic of Disney and why I love them. I hope you guys loved it too. Bye.
What an eloquent speaker.
Yes. I've missed Dylan. Dylan Mentes, why haven't you been sending voicemails in a really long time? I've missed your voice.
Dylan, your voice is so molasses.
So that is one thing. But if this film, this is one of the reasons why it had to be made without anthropomorphic animals, because if this was made with humans and the different races, yeah, it would be very...
It would be so literal.
In arms about this film, basically, right? But the way to cover it and tell the story and the message and the theme without,
What I really think is what's interesting is how Dylan took one meaning from it, but other people might take other meanings. You know, like how Judy is a female and she's stuff like that. So Zootopia is definitely not just about racism. It's about all the isms, all the prejudices that society harbors. And how that needs to change and how we can change it.
Well,
it's interesting how everyone's kind of taking their own interpretation from it. But you hit the nail on the head there, Dylan, in that it is for everyone. It is for everyone who wants to change or wants to see change. Very powerful movie for that.
Parallels with, even the Mammal Inclusion Initiative and affirmative action and how... So there were lots of different things that paralleled our real life, but then it wasn't about that. And even with like affirmative action and going to college and whatnot, I felt like, where was I reading this recently? Someone who was one of the first people who went to college after the fact, and they felt one of the first Black guys or girls who went to college through affirmative action, and they felt that when they were there, people were looking at them as if you took someone else's spot because you had to fill a quota. That very much paralleled Judy's personal journey where, she was just there to, we have this policy.
I'm not just your token rabbit. That was very direct, very literal.
Yeah. So, all right. Next and last is Eric. Perhaps. Well, we will wrap it up with Eric next time because nothing went through.
I can hear it perfectly, actually. Y'all couldn't hear it. He was saying Mason is by far the most attractive rotoscoper and the greatest. He's going to be the greatest animator of all time. So I totally agree, Eric. Thank you.
Makes sense. I agree. All right. Hear, hear. All right, guys, thank you for joining us for this episode of the Animation Addicts Podcast. We couldn't do this without you. Let us know your thoughts about Zootopia in the show notes for this episode, rotoscopers.com/118. Give us your little mini reviews and join the discussion there. We will be there after this post, which is the Friday after we record. And a huge thank you to those who joined us live. We had probably more people joining live and having discussion than we've ever had before. It was really cool. And I really do think that because this is a Disney film, it just draws a wider audience because Disney is so universal. And so I loved everybody who was involved in the comments. Thank you so much. Again, you can tweet about this episode if you don't want to go into the notes. Or if you don't want to go into the show notes, you can go to #AnimAddicts or #AnimAddicts118. Also, you can leave us a voicemail at rotoscopers.com/voicemails. So Dylan, Eric, Jesse, and Rachel, thank you for sending voicemails. And if you would like to send a voicemail and never had, you can call that or give us a call at 406-646-6575. And lastly, we want to give a huge, huge shout out to our Rotoscopers patrons. We have an awesome community of patrons who support the show, and we do appreciate it. And, you know, one of the perks, we got to see AJ and hear his thoughts in a nerdy couch discussion. So if that's something you're interested in, go to rotoscopers.com/patron or Patreon to check it out and see the perks of being a patron. I want to give a shout out to 4 new patrons who joined in the past few weeks, Fadi, Thomas, Meep Z, and Mary. So thank you so much and welcome to Roto Nation.
Yay!
That is all we have. You can find us on our individual locations. Rotoscopers, you can find everywhere on social media at Rotoscopers. You can also find me, Morgan Stradling, on Twitter, Instagram, and of course, the Snapchats. At Morgan Stradling. If you don't know how to spell that, then show notes, a good place to go. Chelsea Robson, Twitter, her website, Instagram, and hey, Periscope from time to time at Chelsea Robson. And lastly, the great, illustrious Mason is Mason SMTX. Where all good social media platforms are found.
Yep, masonsmithportfolio.com.
Check it out.
Yep, check me out, y'all.
All right, our next episode is actually going to be on the Don Hertzfeldt shorts. We did do a preview of one of his shorts, his more recent shorts, in our last episode where we reviewed the Oscar-nominated shorts. This, we are going back to a few other of his shorts. There was a series of 3 that tell a story. So this was a patron choice. Mm-hmm. And so we are definitely going to do that. And it's back to Shortsville. Mm-hmm. We are back.
And we will also be discussing the crazy results of the Oscars on that one, too. So definitely, if you are interested in seeing our reactions to the Oscar shorts, check it out.
We already did that. We did it last time.
I know, but like, what happened?
Why can't we talk about it now?
Okay, then
we'll talk about it next time. So stay tuned.
Next week or 2 weeks.
All right. Until next time, guys.
We are the Rotoscopers. I don't even care anymore getting that right.
Yeah. If you don't understand why we're always complaining, it's because when 3 people try to talk on recording, it just doesn't work. So from here on out, we are going to have a button that we push, which is the ceremonial. We are the Rotoscopers. So get ready, guys.